wants to warm up. Let's warm up.
Hello and welcome to Liberty Southwest podcast number 40. The date is January 14th, 2015. I'm joined by Eric Taylor, Chelsea Como, Kirk Pettis, and of course I am Matthew Winter. Tonight we are talking about corporations. Eric, take it away.
So, corporations. I think we've talked about this over the last couple of weeks off the podcast. What we're going for this evening is talk about how corporations came to be, you know, how they play a role in our daily lives, how they play a role in politics. We'll probably talk about politics quite a bit. Corporations really are, for all practical purposes, are treated as, you know, as breathing, living entities according to the law, which I know that Kirk really agrees with, don't you?
I have a different reasoning than most, but mine's more of the, essentially we all are corporations, therefore corporations have to be people as well. Mm-hmm. in the sphere of law through the government, which is why they can't make it to where they're not individual people.
What do you mean?
What do you mean by that? Yeah, go ahead.
Well, just because of how, since we all are corporations in ourselves, therefore, if a business isn't a corp, I mean, if a business, a corporation isn't an individual or a person, then us as citizens, which we are forced into being a corporation, can't be people as well. So, therefore, through the eyes of the law, corporations have to be people.
When you say that people are corporations, are you meaning that? Are you pointing to the fact that we are individual legal entities? Like corporations are their own legal entity? Is that what you're referring to?
More of a straw man.
can you spell that out a little bit more? I'm having a little difficulty following.
I wasn't really planning on getting into this, but it's more of off topic.
Well, we're here now.
Oh, boy. Can I get a lone wolf starting now?
Before it even starts.
No, it's just all the forms we sign when it's through birth certificates, through everything else. We are a corporation. That's why for a lot of our driver's license per se is all capital letters, which dignifies a corporation.
Don't our checks have something that say like authorized signature on them?
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's the exact same vein. There's micro printing on the signature line of every check that says authorized signature. It's only required by a corporation.
Hmm. There you go. Yeah. I don't know, I've never heard of that, but.
Yeah. Part of the reason that this came up is that I think that we hear a lot of different, you know, opinions on corporations as to whether or not they're good or evil. And I feel like I hear a lot of people, you know, just with these blanket statements and blanket opinions about how corporations are in and of themselves evil entities. And, you know, I think it was worth a second look to say, really, are these, you know, just because something is, you know, a legal entity called a corporation, does that inherently make it evil? And, you know, are there maybe some good things that come out of corporations and what kind of, you know, effects do they have on, you know, job creation or products or the economy?
Yeah, I'll kind of, my take on a corporation, you know, as to whether it's evil or good or altruistic, I guess is the same as any other logical or physical tool. It depends on the set of individuals or individual who's behind that corporation. There can be, you can use corporation for good, you can use it for bad. You can use a knife, you know, to cut meat or to cut another person. And really, corporations are a reflection of human nature. So you have, if you look at corporations in general, I think you have you know, it ranges the spectrum of human intentions and nature. So you can't, in my mind, you can't intrinsically define a corporation as corporations as being bad, you know, if they meddle in certain legislation or with the environment, or, you know, you have, I think all of us can look at entities or corporations that do quite a bit of good. We can also look at corporations that are involved in different spheres of life that probably would disagree with. So that's kind of, that's the way that I view corporate enterprise. They're, you know, are good actors and maybe some not so good actors.
Why do you think then that there is this sort of culture ideology out there that corporations are inherently evil and to be distrusted?
I think it's kind of there's a metaphor where the squeaky wheel gets the grease. You have corporations that have been involved in the political sphere that, you know, probably, I mean, there's, you know, in most people's minds, there's no question that they shouldn't be allowed to do what they do. And with success comes power, and the most successful corporations have the most money to wield, and you can buy influence and power in the political realm, in the marketplace. Certainly there are fascist tendencies. Whenever you have large moneyed interests, corporate or any other type of interests who are dealing in the realm of public policy, you have some underhanded tactics that are in place, because, you know, a lot of people who rise up the chain in corporations, they have certain personality traits. You can argue that they don't necessarily, I mean, they'll do what they can to make sure their enterprise is successful as possible.
I think there's a aspect there that's very important, in that legally a corporation is beholden to its stockholders to make money.
Right.
And because of that, they have an inherent disinterest to be responsible citizens, because the social aspect is less of an influence on them than the economic aspect is. And that results in situations where you have corporations doing things that are extremely unethical in the name of making a profit for their shareholders until they're forced to not do that anymore.
Sure. And then you do have some corporate cultures who, you know, the culture is driven by individuals who really do care, about people in the marketplace. I mean, I would say that it's probably more of an exception than the rule, but it's not a situation where they don't exist. I think the negativity associated with corporations is that scenario is by far less common than what you're referencing, Matt. As corporations are, I mean, the purpose of a corporation is to be as cost effective, efficient, and profitable as possible, and that could yield a lot of, that does yield a lot of good for society, better products, more efficient products, more efficient processes. But you have negative fallouts from that as well.
But Eric, don't you think all businesses consider themselves to be that? Why is corporations held to a higher standard of profit motive?
Well, they make more money.
How so?
The largest businesses in the world are publicly traded corporations.
Yeah, but just because of the loopholes in the tax structure and in the legalese of each state and government.
You could argue that, or because of efficiencies. I mean, you certainly could go the route that, you know, they make law to, you know, allow themselves to be the most successful as possible. Or you could make the argument that corporations have the financial resources to identify loopholes in the law and make themselves even more successful than they otherwise would be, and that the law isn't specifically devised to allow, you know, corporate interests to be more successful than small private businesses. But I certainly see where you're coming from. You could take the angle that, you know, corporations are making, you know, essentially defining the rules in the play field so they can be the most successful participants in the free marketplace. Or another angle is corporations, a lot of the time, you know, we still live in a market. It's pretty close to, you know, somewhat of a free market, and that these are just the corporations rise and fall all the time. Like Kodak, for example, used to be a hugely profitable big company. They didn't keep up with technology. They're dying on the vine now. They've lost out to, you know, other companies. You can look at Sears. They were by far the most powerful retail corporation for 70 years. They're dying on the vine now, you know, when you compare them to Costco or Walmart or Target. So their corporations don't live forever, and they're not, you know, you have to have leadership and a product set that is competitive in the marketplace for these companies to continue to exist.
Well, my point is that a corporation can be one individual. I mean, so when people, it goes to back to what Chelsea's brought this top for his topic, that when people hear corporation, everyone has a predetermined idea in their mind what a corporation is. And, you know, so a private corporation versus a public corporation is vastly different just because of the amount of money they can, you know, generate when they need to through public shares. But, it's easier to do so. But, I mean, a private company can sell individual private shares as well. Sure. But, I mean, that just goes to my point that to me, a corporation is all just about the avoidance of liability and how much you can be sued from. Mm-hmm. And
I'd say that's certainly a large aspect of it.
Well, to me, it's just the aspect, because, I mean, there's multiple types of corporations, S-corps, and just regular, but, you know, and then just throughout time, there's just businesses, too, so it's, I just find it hard to just assume that just because it's a corporation, they have this vast amount of resources, so I think there's just, we need to set up certain levels of what we're talking about here, if it's a multinational corporation, or how large they are, or, you know, how many, you know, or we could say how many corporations do this one corporation control and have bought out and acquired through their time as well.
Sure.
Right. But, so we have to talk about, you know, volume and ownership and public versus private and put everything into context, right? And that's why I just think it's so shocking to hear people who have this blanket opinion that corporations are evil. And, you know, I definitely agree with what Eric said that, you know, there can be positive, you know, players on the field and there can be some negative ones. I mean, we can see, like, with Target, for example, they have a really strong philanthropic culture where it's all about giving back to the community and they encourage their employees to do so as well. Now, is anyone requiring them to do that? Absolutely not. They're doing it of their own free will. And I think that that's great. No one is requiring these corporations to, you know, provide charitable contributions or match charitable contributions on behalf of their employees, but we see this happening voluntarily all the time, and yet we still have a culture in which we demonize corporations, and it kind of boggles me why there is such a widespread belief that corporations are inherently evil. And, you know, and if a corporation is acting in a way that we don't agree with and we understand that they're driven to increase profitability for their shareholders, well, us as consumers have played a part in whether or not they're profitable when we choose or not whether or not to buy their product. So we can't just point the finger and say, well, that corporation's evil because they're making these decisions that I don't agree with. Well, then you have to look back and say, am I giving them those profits? Am I buying their products? Am I participating in that as a consumer?
Yeah. And I think, you know, just in my mind, you know, a couple of the reasons why corporations are vilified, is because of, like Kirk said, we need to define what we're talking about by corporation. So we have, you can have a small business that's chartered as a corporation that may have gross revenues of under $1 million, or you have, you know, a large corporation like ExxonMobil or Apple, which have, you know, gross revenue of hundreds of billions of dollars. And there's, you know, there are tens of thousands of companies in that range with, you know, and they have varying degrees of success. They're on, you know, they're leaders in their industry. They're innovating. They're going up. They're going down within their respective marketplace. There's, there's a lot of, when you talk about the free market or corporate enterprise, there, it's a huge area and there's so many variables. At least from what I've observed, I think they really get vilified for, you know, a number of reasons. Environmental concerns of some corporations are very real, and they get dinged on that. And you have those corporations that try to influence regulations through politics. You have widening wealth gap between an average citizen of the United States and successful corporate management or executive leadership, which breeds discontent and the ire of liberals and socialists who politicize it and say, you know, why should these people make thousands of times more than rank and file workers and live lavish lives when you could argue that they don't put in the same amount of physical or, mental effort. So you have the politicization there as well. And then you also have corporations, you know, within state and, well, municipal or city, municipal, state, federal government, they wield the most political power. And a lot of the times, if you talk about Washington, D.C., you have a vast majority of legislation being written by corporate lobbyists who work on K Street, and they submit their legislation to various legislative staff, and it gets passed in law, and it's beneficial to them. So you have – those are some of the bigger areas that I've observed as to why corporations have, you know, a significant stigma to them.
Following in tow. I guess my question is, do we have this expectation of entitlement?
Chelsea, I lost you guys for a little bit.
Oh, I was just going to say, I saw an article recently, and I've heard this argument several times over many years.
Which
about recently how profits in corporations have been rising, right, as a general trend, but that the salaries and wages are not following that trend. So people aren't getting raises that are equal to the, you know, proportion of the profits that are increasing in those corporations. But my question is, why do we feel as though that must be just and right, that if a company is more profitable, that it owes that to be paid out to the employees? Like,
My view on that is globalization is affecting that. So jobs that are more commoditized and are able to be moved offshore or into markets that have cheaper talent that can do the same type of job, that's been occurring for quite a while. So really shows itself when you see stagnant wages in certain commoditized skill sets or areas within business, but within areas of the corporate enterprise or the business world where you have more specialized or rare skill sets. Specifically, I can reference in my area. So in network engineering, I'm a network engineer, software engineering. There's significant upward pressure on wages because there aren't enough people to fill those jobs overseas or here. But if you talk about areas that might be more commoditized, marketing, HR, data entry, areas like that, you can move those or support jobs. You can move those jobs to, you know, to countries that, you know, if they have a good internet connection or good network connection, you can employ staff in Costa Rica or India or, you know, or, the Philippines, you know, areas where you have, or Brazil or Argentina, areas where you have people who can do those jobs and are willing to do those jobs at a lower salary than their counterparts in the United States, and it's a good bump in their pay from what they've been doing where they live. So I think that's a part of the conversation that doesn't happen too often when you talk about stagnant salaries in the corporate, you know, in the corporate area in the United States.
And, I mean, is there a moral obligation? I mean, because we've already established that a corporation is a legal entity whose main loyalty lies in, you know, increasing or maximizing shareholder profits, you know. So do they have any moral obligation to pay higher wages even if they can get the same product for much cheaper elsewhere? Why would we believe that a corporation would have a moral obligation?
No, they're not. That's just the thing, is a corporation legally and morally is required to make profit for its stakeholders. So
it's not legally mandated.
Yes, it is. It's legally required that a corporation creates a profit.
No, and there's plenty of corporations
that are fiduciary responsibility.
We just talked about them last week with Elon Musk's corporations. They don't bring any profit in yet their stock prices are still rising.
Corporations are required by law to maximize profits.
No. I find that ridiculous.
Well, they have a fiduciary responsibility to do the best that they can, you know, for on behalf of the shareholders.
Well, then they should just dump all their money into politicians more and more to create more and more regulations to stomp out their competition, and then that would maximize their profits too.
Let me.
I mean, that's such a broad statement that it makes no sense.
Let me speak real quick before we move off of this, off of the stagnant wage topic in the United States. That's when you go to other countries, when you go to like what I referenced, Costa Rica, Brazil, Philippines, they've had significant wage increases. And those wage increases, and I don't think this is top of mind for a lot of people, when you're raising up the lower or even impoverished classes into middle class, that in turn benefits the free market. It benefits the United States. You're able to sell products to those people. Eventually, that creates jobs. In the United States, this last year, in the year 2014, there were the most jobs created in 25 years. We're starting to see benefits of globalization, of moving some of the more commoditized jobs offshore as the United States starts to reap significant economic rewards as a result of globalization. So, you know, some of the stagnant salary, stagnant job growth trends they are starting to change, and that very well could gain momentum over the next couple of years.
One thing I want to mention to what I was saying earlier, there's a case that was brought to litigation against Craigslist. eBay bought a lot of stock and became a stockholder of Craigslist. Mm-hmm. Craigslist said, we don't want to be a corporation that's going to go after maximization of profits. And eBay ended up taking them to court. And what the judge who was ruling on it, which was William B. Chandler III, said, having chosen a for-profit corporate form, the Craigslist directors are bound by the fiduciary duties and standards that accompany that form. The standards include acting to promote the value of the corporation for the benefit of its stockholders. So it is very much legally required to turn a profit. You can do a little bit of corporate citizenship and corporate responsibility, but as your stockholders, what I'm saying is your
you can't just underwrite it to where it's you're deceiving the public that you're not actually creating profit and siphoning them off into other ventures. That keeps it off the public books.
That's not what this is about, though. This is one company bought stock in another.
If eBay doesn't have controlling stock interest, if they only have 5% of the stock, they don't have a say anyways.
Well, you have a say if you're a stockholder.
But, yeah,
a stockholder, that's the whole... No, that's the whole point of the lawsuit. I mean, you can't say it's happened.
It's besides... they're just not legalized to maximize profits.
That's their responsibility when they form as a corporation.
That's the responsibility of any business is to create a profit, and whether it's corporation or not. And then to go back into employees, every business wants the minimum amount of employees that they can possibly have. And so if as an employee, all you have to do is prove that you have a value to what you do, and you'll have a job. If you can say, "Hey, I'll bring this company this much money, and you pay me this, and you're going to get that much X profit year after year," any business will hire you because they don't have to do anything about it. And you're
right. So, well, I mean, yeah. So basically, making sure that you are demonstrating your value in excess of your salary. That's easier to do when you have. You know, like as we were speaking about earlier, if you have a unique skill set and you're capable of bringing something of unique value as an individual to a company, but if you're working in a field or a job or bringing a skill set that is very commoditized, then it's much more difficult to demonstrate your value when, you know, you could go out on the market, and maybe that's a market outside of the United States, and pay less for it. You know, it's much more difficult to say, like, yes, I know you could go to India and pay someone $5 an hour to do this job, but I want you to pay me $15 an hour. You know, that's a much more difficult argument. But at the end of the day, I feel like employment is, you know, it's not, I don't feel like employers owe their employees anything except for what you've agreed upon. You know, it's a contract. It's an agreement. I agree to come and do this work, and you agree to pay me X amount of dollars in return. And I believe that that's an agreement between the employee and the employer, and both parties agree to it, and both parties fulfill their duties. And I don't feel like there's a moral obligation outside of that.
Yeah, it's not a moral, but there's also, I mean, you don't want to be known as that company. Then no one's going to want to work for you in the first place. If you're so stingy,
so you have to be competitive.
And tight, and so, I mean, it comes back to business ethics as a whole.
Right.
Well, it comes to, like, free markets and how free markets work, right?
Yeah.
Well, so, you know, if we look at ourselves as corporations.
Not really.
If I want to maximize my profits, and I'm working for this corporation that's stingy with my salary, and I know that I could do better, I can then go, say, I leave that corporation and go to someone else who's going to pay me more. And that's totally fair. I mean, would we, you know, look at an employee and say, well, that's pretty crappy. This employee left this corporation to go make more money elsewhere. Do we see that as a moral dilemma? No, we don't. I mean, obviously, if somebody can get a higher, you know, paying job, they're going to go get that higher paying job and do that instead. Take that opportunity. And nobody looks at them as though they're evil because they wanted more money. So why do we have this double standard on the other side of that coin?
Well, why do you think Google supplies their own free lunches, and they have nap rooms, and they have decompression chambers, they have, you know, idea zones,
right.
fun
they
areas?
Want the best employees.
That has nothing to do with profit.
Yes, it does.
It's competition. You want it's a retention
yeah,
of the best employees, which it will hopefully pay out into a better product, which then will hopefully pay out into greater profits.
Yeah, so therefore profit is completely relative.
Well, you can look at Google. Actually, there was an antitrust lawsuit that was settled today between Apple and Google, where specifically Apple was barring companies from poaching their engineering talent, and they got fined in excess of $100 million for that. And that's an example of a marketplace that's colluded by corporations, Microsoft, Adobe, Google, Apple at one time had under the table agreement saying don't pay our employees more to go to other corporations. In that instance, that's where cover antitrust and laws, anti-competitive workplace laws, that's a place for government to intervene, and they have intervened. But when you talk about Google and their perks, that's another incentive to get the best talent to work for you. So not only do you know most of their they pay on the high end for most of their talent, they add amenities that make them want to come there. And in any marketplace, if you're a good employee and you're a bright person and you have something to bring to the table and you work for a stingy company, there's nothing stopping you from going to a company that values your skill set and will pay you more. If you can't do that, that is against the law. So the way the kind of getting to what Chelsea is talking about, the free market should allow, and in the United States better than anywhere else in the world, allows for a fluid market. You know, you can use even Matt as an example. He thought he could get a better job, maybe do a little bit better, so he went to another company, and there wasn't anything that kept him from doing that. So when you talk about skill sets, workers moving around, you should be able to do that in the marketplace.
Worked out pretty good for me.
Yep.
Yeah, and nobody would call you evil for doing that, right? Like, it wasn't wrong of you to desire a higher salary and go get one. Right? Or a job that you liked better.
There's nothing
wrong with that.
I don't feel guilty.
Well, I wouldn't, you know. So why would it be wrong for a corporation to try and maximize their own profits? You're trying to maximize yours. I'm trying to maximize mine. What's so evil about a corporation trying to do so?
I don't think there's anything inherently evil in it.
What I find wrong in what corporations do, I could care less what they do. I mean, as long as it doesn't impact my life, go ahead and run your business how you want to run it. But when they sit there and help pass regulations that hinder other businesses and competition, just like and the employees' growth, like what the antitrust suit that was between Apple and Google. I mean, it's stuff like that gives businesses a bad name, corporations or anything, and.
I agree with that.
So, yeah, I mean, that's the basis of what I'm totally fine in pointing the finger at any corporate entity that sits there and wants to deem that I have to pay for their pollution or pay for set wages or anything. It's whenever they utilize government through the act of force upon other businesses or people, that's where I draw the line.
Right, and it's no different. But, it's no different between a wealthy individual who can use their money and power to influence legislation in a corporate body, right? I mean, I think what you're getting at with that statement it's the inherent problem of money in politics is, you know, it doesn't matter if it's someone who's worth an individual on his own who's worth, you know, billions of dollars influencing how legislation is written or a corporation that is using tens of millions of dollars through lobbyists to influence legislation, right? It's the idea that, you know, what's a way to reduce how money impacts how government regulates, you know, business in general or life in general, right?
I think there's one, you know, we could draw like just one little quote from scripture here, and it's for the love of money is the root of all evil. So if you inherently make it legally required that a corporation has to love money, then they're going to do things that are considered evil.
But to me, I think that when we talk about how a corporation can influence, you know, politicians and legislation, or if we talk about how individuals can influence legislation, I would argue that the issue is not with those individuals, nor is it with those corporations. I would argue that the issue that should be had is why do we have a system that allows money to be dictating our legislation. I would say that the problem is with our government, not with the people who are trying to influence it.
Well, I think it's our fault. I mean, it's the citizens' fault. It's people accept it.
Yeah, we allow it to the government.
I think that's just a natural tendency of power and control. But it's allowed to happen, and that's why, like I've said when we talked about GMOs and permaculture, I just have had this feeling that there's something wrong with the way we farm, and there's just this inherent feeling that I have is what these multinational conglomerates, these super large corporations and the power they control, is I think there's something really going. I haven't been able to pin it down what the real problem is. Obviously, it has a lot to do with government, but I've just never been able to exactly pinpoint it or correctly analyze it, I should say, but that's why it's fun to talk about it like this. So,
yeah, that's the $64,000 question is how do you, because when you talk about corporate influence in any area, specifically if you know specifically government, what are ways to prevent that from happening? It's been a common practice throughout civilization in general, where you have the fusion of wealthy wealthy interests influencing how economics and politics occur, right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these large corporations utilize our military to go control vast other plots of land throughout the world.
Sure.
And it's this, it's turned into more of fascist. So we could talk about is, I really think that we've become much more of a fascist country than a republic or a democracy.
But what was it?
How do we prevent that?
A constitutional republic that's completely gone at this point.
But what's the difference between, if you want to talk about a constitutional republic, really, if you look at, the socioeconomic status or influence of government, when the republic was founded, who were most of the politicians or who had the most influence? It was, primarily the agrarian aristocracy. So the elite farmers had the most influence on government. You could argue that they're the same actors, but in just a slightly different environment than who has the most influence on government now. It's the wealthy bankers, wealthy corporatists, different structure, same actors. So I think when you...
Well, I'd say that there's a difference, though. One of them's actually producing a commodity, and the other one's trading something that doesn't really add any value, theoretically.
Well, a portion of it. I mean, if you want to talk about commodity traders, but, I mean, that's a small subset of the free marketplace. I mean, if you're a trader that trades oil or pork bellies or copper or metals or whatever, you're not responsible for most of the financial transactions in the marketplace.
So, I guess what I'm hearing is basically that money leads to corruption and here's where we are. It doesn't matter who has it, but this is where the corruption comes from and we don't know how to stop it. And this isn't a new question or debate by any means. This is like the age-old debate, right? Mm-hmm. What do we do about it? Is that the question?
How do you create a value? How do you make it so that a corporate stakeholder, a corporate citizen would want to be motivated to be responsible? Like, how do you increase responsibility? Right now, they're completely insulated from personal accountability because the corporation takes all responsibility.
Right.
There was a time there was a time that corporations were trusts that were formed through the government that they said, we're trusting you to provide this particular function, and it wasn't protected like they are today.
So I hate to keep going back to this idea, but I love the whole vote with your dollar idea. I mean, so if you're someone who looks at Walmart and says, I don't like, what they're doing, I don't feel comfortable with the way that they operate or the actions that they take. And so then I think you have a choice. when I go to buy my goods, am I going to go to Walmart or am I going to go to Target? You know, I think that by doing so, we really can put our money where our mouths are, and collectively we can make a huge change in the profitability and the motives and actions of those corporations. You know, so if everybody said, look, Walmart, we don't like what you're doing, and I'm not trash talking Walmart, I'm just using it as an example. You know, if we didn't feel comfortable with what a single corporation was doing, we can put our money where our mouth is and not shop there anymore and not give them our money. You know, and by doing so, they're forced to do one of two things. They can either change their ways and then get back, you know, some of our dollars, or they can not change and then they'll go out of business. You know, I see it as going one of two ways. Either they collapse because they continue acting in a way that the public isn't okay with, or they react to the public demand.
Well, I think you can see a lot of that has happened in the last decade or last two decades, even when through globalization, where a lot of workers were, you know, offshored to other countries, but there was a lot of blowback from that. I mean, companies just found out that it wasn't, you might have saved a little money and made some profit in the short term, but it ended up costing more money in the long term. And so a lot of those, I think that's why there's been a large growth in jobs lately too, is a lot of companies are coming back and utilizing more in-country aspects of the stuff that they usually offshored. Or they
so they had to respond to, yeah. They had to respond to the fact that there was a demand of people saying, we don't like it when you take these jobs and outsource them outside of the country. And so they felt the financial pain of that, and then were forced to respond as a result.
Well, see, but I think that what a lot of is competition. It's either smaller corporations that form up or just mom and pop stores that utilize the weaknesses of large corporations. And I mean, large corporations do not move quick. And the smaller right. the business, the faster you can adapt to certain stuff. So that's where a lot I disagree with Eric saying that most of these large corporations provide the most innovation. I think a lot of it comes from smaller shops that end up getting bought out by larger corporations.
Yeah, I didn't say innovation. I said processes and efficiency. I would agree with you when you say, you know, innovation. There are some exceptions. There are some very innovative large corporations out there, but as a general rule, a large amount of innovation takes place at smaller companies that either go one of two routes. They grow or they get bought up. But the advantage of maybe what you'd say is a large, slow-moving corporation is they have scale and efficiency, so they're able to produce, market, distribute products at a much more cost efficient price than smaller companies.
Yeah, but that comes with risk. I mean, sure. So I mean, if you're forecasting you're going to be able to sell these products, and if that all of a sudden something changes in the marketplace and your products are worthless, you're out large, fast amounts of money. And to retool or to reshape minute things is a big process for those companies. Mm-hmm. But, damn it. I was going somewhere.
To get back, maybe you'll remember it, but to get back to what you're talking about, the insource or the job growth in the United States also has to do with a manufacturing boom. You could call it the innovation economy, the software economy, but there's also a services boom that's taking place in the United States from, software engineering, robotics, manufacturing, that type of thing. That's really leading the worldwide market, in innovation and services coming into the marketplace too.
Yeah, well, the biggest weakness I see in corporations is the profit motive. So And he, I mean, it's not like there's the head of the organization is the controller of the company, the CEO. It's the shareholders. So, and the shareholders have no, I mean, if something better comes along, they're just going to dump those shares and move on to the next company. I mean, it's a very liquid aspect of the market cap. So it's, to me, that's a huge weakness to where people don't give a damn what the company does. They're just there to make, you know, hopefully the shares go up or they get their dividends every year. And then if something better comes along, they're going to abandon that corporation and go to another publicly shared company.
Right. And dividends are especially increasing dividends over 10 to 20 year, 10 or 20, 30 year period of time indicate that a company is healthy, corporation is healthy, is innovating, you know, successfully competing in the marketplace in a way to maintain shareholder loyalty. So the most successful companies, which tie into the companies that have, you know, the best array of products and services, you know, continually kick up the dividend, which allows stockholders to accrue more and more cash from the dividend and also pushes up the stock price. So, you know, within even the, you know, if you look over, you look at one of the most successful investors in history, Warren Buffett, that's his recipe for success. Identify companies with wide moats, differentiated products and services that have good leadership in place, who continually kick up a higher and higher net revenue, gross and net revenue, and kick up dividends. And you know, within the context of the stock market, you attract more investors, push up the stock price, and they retain stock. So it's not any different than the free market. The stock market, you can have companies that are there for a while and they can maintain the facade of being a hot new commodity in the marketplace. But eventually the market will, you know, value those companies at what they should be valued at.
And I thought it was interesting. I'm sorry to roll back around at this now, mm-hmm. but the idea that when corporations do outsource jobs to other countries, you know, we might be seeing stagnant wages here or reduction of wages or something like that. But, and it might seem, you know, compared to inflation that, you know, with the cost of living concerns and everything else that, these jobs, these commodity jobs aren't really providing much here. But when you take them overseas, that's a huge jump up for those people. Not sure. So we're looking at people who, you know, here might be considered lower middle class, but if you place them in another country, they'd be considered upper middle.
Yep.
That's a much, you know, the lowest quality of life here is still much greater quality of life as compared with some other countries in the world. And the idea that then those people can start to participate as consumers on a global scale and then create more demand for other products and services is a really cool idea in understanding how all of that works.
That is one benefit of globalization, and it's been demonized. But if you look, you know, just within the United States over the last 100 years, standard of living, life expectancy, quality of living has gone up exponentially. And with the advent of globalization, that's starting to, you know, as some of these jobs, you know, they move and you have the ability to educate more people within these countries, it brings up their standard of living. And if you have innovative, if you're talking about corporations, you have innovative corporations that are selling products to those people, that brings money back into the United States and creates jobs. That's really, you know, within the last 10 years, we have the networking infrastructure in place that really facilitates, you know, the availability of a lot of those types of jobs in what previously would could be considered third world countries. And a lot of those jobs are corporate jobs.
Well, the problem I see, though, is this globalization is a lot of these corporations are going and making deals with other governments and that prevent competition in these countries, and they get certain deals that strip resources and treat their workers more as slaves than anything else, because they're a dime a dozen in a lot of these areas. So, but when I was taking a sociology class in college, that was exactly what I brought up to my professor one day, is that with globalization, America's wages are so high, with the rest of the world so much lower, that America's wages are going to stagnate, if not go decrease, because once you become a globalized entity, that there's got to be a leveling out of wages throughout the world, as in a, if all things were equal in a fair game. But it's I don't like to consider it that it benefits America, because we'll get these other people will make more money so we can sell them products. I just like it more as an ethical thing. Sure. To where they're you know, able to start becoming more the middle class starts growing in other countries. Like China's middle class has been booming. There's a much larger middle class in China now than ever before, and that's gonna and that's happening all over the world too, with more globalization and governments' realization to utilize more of a free market.
Yeah, and yeah. When talking about these kind of, I think a lot of the time, and one thing that isn't well known, well, it depends on if you've looked at it at all or not. A lot of these governments are very corrupt. I mean, you have to
our own included.
Well, compare India to the United States. It's like night and day. Or China to the United States, or African governments, or even Brazil. The governments, you know, a lot of the times to even participate in the marketplace, you have to bribe government officials in those areas to even get involved.
Our government does the same thing.
Sure.
Our politicians have to bribe or pay to get into committees.
Yeah. So that's, unfortunately, that's the cost of doing business. And a lot of, and it shouldn't be. I don't think any of us would argue that. You know, it's the cost of doing business. And, you know, as a result or a corollary from that, you get in the countries, you're able to provide jobs to these people. They're able to, you know, their standards of living goes up. It positively benefits those people, creates more jobs, more ancillary jobs within the country, within, you know, India or whatever country you're talking about, and then also positively impacts the United States and other countries too.
What I think is interesting is that when you tend to talk to people who are maybe more left-leaning or more socialist-leaning, that there tends to be this attitude or idea that the amount of goods and services available in the world is a stagnant pie. So, like, there's only so much available, and there's this grand idea of scarcity. So what follows that, then, that main assumption is the idea that if I have a lot of money and you don't have a lot of money, it means that I have more than my fair share of the pie. And then rather than identifying the fact that it doesn't have to be a zero-sum game, like, it is possible to make that pie grow. Like, it's possible that, you know, we can be innovative and create more for everyone. That instead of saying, you know, the global pie is X trillion dollars, let's say, you know, let's just throw out an imaginary figure, and let's say the pie is, you know, $100 trillion, and that's all there is, and everybody gets a certain amount of that pie. Instead, we can say through innovative processes and creative solutions, we can make that pie grow to, you know, 300 or 400 trillion, and everyone can get more if we're more creative and innovative. You know, so it's not about if I have more, then that means that you have less. You know, if I benefit, that means somebody else loses. It's not a win-lose world. And I think it's a very, it undermines our ability to grow if we really work in that myopic and untrue frame of reference. Like, if we understand. Yeah, go ahead.
But that's what governments do. They want to keep things exactly how they are. It's, they're there to solve the solution and pretend that they're fixing things, but they need those problems to contain their power that they have. So it's that it's why I don't like this whole pro corporations, because I think everyone should be their own business, and I don't like the entities of everyone working for a corporation, because that just makes controlling people and vicinities all the easier. And I just think that that's what America was all about, is individualism and self-reliance and freedom from a control structure that corporations, I think, feed off of.
And I my personal view on this is, I think there should be really the ability for anyone to do whatever they want. So if you have a skill set or desire to work within a corporate environment, great. If you want to be an entrepreneur, or, you know, live off the grid, you know, live off the land, you know, more power to you. I think in the grand scheme of things, certainly the individualist or entrepreneur can offer certain goods and services that, you know, maybe can't be provided by a corporation, and vice versa. And it's somewhat myopic to just focus on one area when, you know, the marketplace should be able to facilitate, you know, all different avenues.
Well put.
I'm
surprised I haven't heard anybody, you know, really talking about how corporations are evil. I feel like I hear that so often. I was really ready and expecting and preparing myself to fight that battle tonight.
I think this is the wrong crowd to have say that.
I tend to think I think it's unnecessary. I don't think there should be a thing called corporations. That's what I inherently believe. I think governments create the need to have something called a corporation. Mm-hmm. And I think by it doing that, create these conglomerates that are now controlling governments. And to me I think the root cause is corporations that don't have the specific you can't pinpoint it to individuals causing the problem. It's the corporation's fault that doesn't it's a complete entity of a mass consortium of people.
Right.
So
But
that's what's creating.
The governments that necessitated the corporations, and then the corporations that then followed.
Yeah,
because
of tax structure and certain liability. Actually, governments allow. I mean, these corporations, why people consider them evil is because they pollute and they maximize profits, let's say. But everything they do is completely legal because of what government says is legal. And then people become in an uproar. Politicians are run on, all right, we're going to fix this. Then they get bought up by the corporations to pin the blame on other things. And they do a little Band-Aid fix, and then nothing ever gets done for the problem at hand. The problem is the control of the government in the first place, the meddling they do. If they would just get out, the free market would develop its own remedy, and with more and more competition in the marketplace, I don't think that businesses could ever grow that large because of the lack of liquidity that and the changing of a free market, that it would change so rapidly that to grow that large would be extremely hard to utilize in a free market.
So
because of innovation,
we haven't talked
and
as much about
because there are limited resources, and you need to maximize the limited amount of resources in the world. Money is a different concept now with how the fiat money and everything, but value and productivity grow wealth, and that's not a zero sum game. But what is zero sum is hard resources on this planet. And therefore, we should not pollute. And that's why I've said multiple times on these podcasts that I believe all businesses should have to pay for their complete remediation of pollution.
Yeah, and I've
that's why you rock the critical habitat plates, right?
I've thrown out the counter argument that the marketplace should incentivize corporations to clean up whatever messes, or there should be enterprises that fill that need, because I think it's in everyone's best interest not to pollute.
And, well, but was that lack of – but it is until you go to these other third world countries that don't give a damn. Mm-hmm. And you can go and strip mine. You can go level rainforest or whatever.
Sure.
And then just dump in the ocean, river systems, whatever, and there's no remediation for that, and you can't even we have such a corrupt media that's controlled by all these corporations that you can't even pinpoint the source, and or get it out there to have that public outcry because it's all PR'd and spun to different aspects.
So Kirk, do you? I mean, let's look 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years in the future. Do you think, because, you know, the current market's probably not, you know, they're probably not going to get rid of corporations. They're probably not going to go away.
They'll never go away.
But don't you think that there's a possibility that either through, I really don't like, I mean, and I've seen this, and this is more, this is an idea that's been thrown out there, that you create exchanges, environmental exchanges, where, you know, different entities or bodies of water, land are actually owned by individuals or companies, and they're incentivized.
Ooh.
Yeah, exactly. but that's an idea that's been floated. But more my... you know, kind of the way that I've, you know, in my utopian vision is do you think that it's possible that the market entrepreneurs, small business owners like you've referenced, is there a possibility they could take advantage of a problem of pollution and maybe develop technologies, services, products that could alleviate some of those problems?
Yes, and that's exactly what I'm saying, that these businesses, by therefore having to deal with their own pollution, the true costs of creating a product, that they would either have to do that in-house or hire it out to a third party.
Or have government policy force them to do it.
Well, I think if it was the avenue. Government policy, I think it's more of an ethical system of just the rule of law.
Sure.
On that yeah, it's that every business has costs and every product has costs, and that the pollution or whatever byproduct that you have to create to utilize that product or to create the product needs to be a cost to that product, and that business has to deal with that cost and integrated into the price of selling that product. Therefore, I mean, but we have governments that allow these corporations to get by with alleviating their cost of their product by being able to dump into rivers or whatever forms of pollution are out there. There's so many to count that it's hard to count, but there's methods of dealing with this pollution. And because we have one Earth here and limited amount of resources, we should not glean the benefits of such a myopic view of our higher standard of life and look towards the history and the future of mankind, that, you know, that let's leave this Earth better than when we found it. And I think it's doable.
I think both are. Should be able to raise standard living and leave the Earth in a better state. I have a bunch of clips. I'm going to play one here. It's kind of on more of the negatives of corporations. We can play this and have some closing thoughts and wrap it up within the next 10 or 15 minutes here.
Perhaps one of the most controversial and politicized issues in America is welfare. Yes, I'm talking about all those statists who can't keep their grubby hands out of Uncle Sam's pockets. Well, on the heels of Obama signing a farm bill that will cut funding to food stamps by $8 billion, a new report by Good Jobs First has exposed the absurd amount of taxpayer dollars that are going to provide welfare, not for the poor, but for wealthy corporations. Of course, corporate welfare is not really mentioned on the corporate press as a problem, but I wonder why. Couldn't have anything to do with the fact that it's owned by five corporations, could it? Well, the report is aptly titled Subsidizing the Corporate 1%, revealing that state and local governments have shelled out at least $110 billion to companies doing business in the U.S. of A. The study compiles figures over several years, analyzing the many ways these companies are enjoying special treatment, which can come in the form of everything from utility discounts to cash giveaways. In theory, the government justifies corporate subsidies to incentivize business growth and to support startup industries. And if applied in that way, I'm not entirely against it. But the stats and lack of transparency paint a much different picture. See, the majority of these subsidies are going to only a select few of the richest of the rich companies in the country. So which mega corporations are benefiting the most? Well, first off, there's Dow Chemical, a $57 billion company that's been exploiting U.S. energy policy for years. Dow has surpassed any other corporation on the list by the sheer number of subsidies it's received, 416 in total, adding up to $1.4 billion. Next up, digital science company Intel, which manufactures aerospace components, made number three on the list, with 58 subsidies totaling $3.8 billion. Or take Alcoa Aluminum Company, which has taken in 91 subsidies totaling $5.6 billion. In fact, the amount that Alcoa receives in government handouts far exceeds their annual profits. As journalist David Johnston points out, on the basis of its pre-tax income for the last 4 years, these subsidies amount to all the pre-tax profits Alcoa can expect for the next 189 years. Wow. So this company is essentially running on government cash. Nice. Also interesting that Alcoa makes no public mention of these massive subsidies at its annual shareholders meeting. Finally, topping the list at number one cash cow recipient, with 137 subsidies totaling a staggering $13 billion. Now, Boeing is notorious for holding jobs hostage while states fight each other for its contracts. This $13 billion in handouts reflects the amazing deals lucky Boeing has clearly made with states like Washington and South Carolina. Keep in mind that Boeing is the number two provider for America's military machine, which I don't think is an industry that deserves financial breaks. Guys, the subsidies in this report are often in the form of tax abatement, which underscores exactly how much burden falls on average taxpayers. Okay. Because many of these massive corporations are relying on government welfare for profit in place of actually earning the money from their sales. An organization called Citizens for Tax Justice points out that at the end of the day, this tax burden hits the poor especially hard, adding that, quote, in every state, low-income taxpayers pay more as a share of income than the wealthiest 1%. Remember, this report doesn't even take into account federal subsidies, which highlights the need for more transparency on the issue of corporate welfare.
I don't think that's accurate, but...
You tell me which makes more sense, continuing to bicker about food stamps or addressing the insane corporate welfare that actually perpetuates poverty, all in the name of job creation.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with Brenda that. But it is
I don't think they pay anything in taxes, so...
Who?
The poor.
Right. Isn't it under the stats, the bottom 48%, they get tax credits?
Right.
And... Yeah, so really, I think only 51 or 52% of the population actually pays an income tax.
I think that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Can't go to 51 the other way because then, you know, the whole thing will fall apart. You can only go to 49.
Yeah.
So the only way that they could possibly be taking that in is if they're considering, you know, like sales tax, if they're factoring that in.
They'd still end up the same, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that clip kind of spoke to some of the issues I think Kirk was referencing around corporations that were, they'll exploit government policy to their benefit.
And I'd love to know the largest corporation of all is the United States of America.
The government.
And I would love to know if corporations have to make profits, then we should sue the government because they are in a huge, huge deficit.
Right.
They are in red.
So, any closing thoughts? Are we getting close to wrap-up time?
I think we're getting close. We just don't have very much disagreement tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At
the end of the day, yeah, I mean, just understanding that, you know, corporations aren't inherently good or evil. It's just, you know, really looking at the individual corporation in question and identifying whether or not you support their practices and their procedures. And if you don't, then maybe identifying which companies you do support and voting with your dollar to maximize the profits of people who are acting responsibly.
Yeah, the world's always changing. We always have to adapt. And all we can really do is focus on ourselves, so that's the best method of doing so. And everyone loves to not be accountable and point the finger at corporations or anything. But what the main problem is government force upon us, and any corporation utilizing government to force us to do anything, I view as completely wrong. There's ways to adapt.
Well, John with the man.
All right. Wrap it up?
Yeah, let's wrap it up. This has been Liberty Southwest podcast number 40. It is January 14th, 2015. I've been Eric Taylor, Chelsea Kilmo, Kirk Pettis, and I am Matt Winter. Special thanks to Martin Prince for the new theme song. Have a good night.
Have a good one.
Peace out.
Adios, mofo.